Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Hope you tune into my show, Untold with Maria Menounos, this Thursday night at 8 on E!
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey everybody, welcome to The 100, AfterBuzz TV After Show. I'm your host, Tari J. Miller, and this evening I'm joined by Ben Bateman.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for having me back.
Great. We are covering Season 2, Episode 2, Increment Weather, and it was a very exciting episode. Ben, what were your general thoughts?
The first thing I just want to say is every episode, I feel like I'm more impressed. I'm not going to put it on the same level as like a Game of Thrones or a Walking Dead yet, but obviously it's a different network, but
right.
Just in the sense that I keep feeling like I'm getting things I'm not expecting, and especially the way this episode ended.
Yeah.
I'm just like, this is awesome. Like, I'm not 100% in getting what I want if I could just imagine the perfect version of the show, but it's really getting me to places that I wasn't expecting it to go. That's
yeah,
awesome.
They're really pushing the envelope and kind of like, as I think I use this phrase way too much, but they're really subverting expectations. Like, you really expect it to go one way, and then they're always turning that lever to make it just shy of that. And by shy, I mean left of it as opposed to what you thought.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. And I felt like there were a lot of moments where I had physical reactions, like, we'll talk about the whole Clark arm thing, but like, and shows don't often get me to do that, but this one it hits me.
Yeah.
And I love that actually.
Yeah. It's really amazing when you think about how much high quality television there is on the air now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll call it premium content because that's what I like to call it. Everything from the streaming networks to the pay networks to the actual networks. And everybody's trying to give you something a little darker than they used to and a little more intelligent, and they understand that viewership on the air is dwindled, so they need to really make, if they want you to watch it in real time or at all, they need to really give you something special. They can't just go by the numbers anymore. I mean,
yeah.
I guess NBC or they can a little bit, but most networks don't. So when you see a show like a channel like the CW giving you something like this, it's just interesting. You really realize they understand what they have to do now.
Yeah.
This is the kind of content they're going to need to give you if they want you to watch a show.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, and we were talking about it earlier that they really stepped up their game. Not to say that they were, like, not to say they weren't great before, but, like, they've really expanded their programming range. You know, they started in a very niche area and then broadened out to, like, a sci-fi and fantasy and all include all those genres, which is great. It was a very smart move on their part.
Big time. Huge.
Yeah.
But I even feel like I had a girlfriend that used all of the Vampire Diaries, so I have peripherally seen a lot of the Vampire Diaries.
Right.
It was never a show that I chose to watch. However, the sense that I got about the show is that this is exactly what I'm expecting it to be. This is Twilight Light on television. I mean, in so many words. And not to speak negatively, that's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Fans of Twilight understand that. This, though, is totally different. It's in the same wheelhouse in the sense that it's like a little bit like sci-fi or fantasy,
mm-hmm.
but it's pretty dark.
Yeah.
I mean, they keep kind of throwing you curveballs. Anyway, we'll get to the end of the episode.
I want to get your general opinion on the new intro. Fans, you guys know that they have a new intro and it's beautiful. Where were your thoughts, Ben?
Looked great. You definitely, in multiple facets of the show, I can tell that they're putting a lot more money into it.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's cool to see, especially with a sci-fi show,
mm-hmm.
to invest money. And yeah, it was a great intro. I really liked that they gave you landscape and cool music and epic music and names, as opposed to the old school model, which would just be like, Clark laughing, and then like, Bellamy scowling and Finn like doing something clever with like a little, you know what I mean?
What show are you watching? This isn't like Friends where it's like just the little face plates.
Yeah, maybe I'm a little outdated. Like I said, it's been a while since I chose to watch a show on the CW, so.
Right. But yeah, I agree. And it's good because now, especially since we're kind of expanding the range that the show is going into in terms of all the characters are kind of dispersing in different areas, it helps to kind of put a place to where everything is. Like, you know that Mount Weather is in this area. You know that now they're closer to Washington. Jaha landed either in San Francisco or New York, depending on which bridge that was in the sand, but whatever, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now it kind of gives you a broader map of where everything is taking place, and you can actually, in the physical world, go, oh, I know exactly where that is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's super interesting. I read an interview this last week with Jason Rothenberg, the creator, and he was talking about the sets, and he was talking about the first season was all about the Ark. They mm-hmm. spent all this money building the Ark.
Yeah.
And that was the huge commitment on the show, was to build that. And that now in the second season, since they got renewed, they spent all this money building Camp Jaha. It's like this huge, and Mount Weather, he said, is just this huge, beautiful set.
Yeah.
It's just enormous. I mean, he teased things to come down at Camp Jaha about, like, you could see him starting to build at the mm-hmm. beginning of this episode. You know, it's going to be a town. There's going to be a bar. There's going to be a hospital. Like, they're trying to turn it into their home base.
Yeah.
And you are starting to get a sense of this is, you know, you're getting the landscape, just like you said.
Right.
Which is cool.
Yeah. It's awesome because it leaves them lots of room to grow.
Big time.
And so, speaking of Camp Jaha, let's dive right into that. Let's start out with Raven's storyline, because we get her in a bed. She's talking to Abby, and Abby's giving her essentially two choices. She says, you can leave the bullet in, which will keep... stay alive, but she'll be paralyzed forever.
Yeah.
Or they can try to take the bullet out, and there's no guarantee that she'll live, but she may keep her legs intact.
So let's ask a quick question. So from the moment that she's lying on the table and Abby says to her, you have two options. So you, before she even said it, you knew the two options, and so did I.
Right.
Any viewer with, you know what I mean? It's pretty clear, the writing is pretty clear what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You also realize that your expectation, with how predictable that would be that of course she's going to try to get the bullet taken out. And mm-hmm. of course she's going to be okay. And yeah. it's going to be a miracle. And you're writing it before it even happens.
Mm-hmm.
So now everything that all happened, except...
Except she didn't have access to... Or her left leg
yeah.
is still numb, so she can't access it below the knee.
The idea of her being partially crippled on the show for a long period of time sounds sort of more bleak for such a pretty character than I would expect.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's possible on the show. That doesn't seem far from what they would choose to do, but it also seems like if you were, like, living in a civilization built on Earth of survivors from space mm-hmm. and you were this really pretty teen, or like she's 18 maybe or 19, I feel like she's a little older than Finn for some reason, but they're around yeah. the same age
for real,
and you had like one leg, like it seems like you'd be so like bitter and angry and it would be like a really dark character.
Yeah.
So I'm a little curious how that's going to turn out, because I can't really picture it right now. The way she would, over like a long period of time, she only had access to one leg. She was on crutches and had nerve damage in her leg.
Yeah.
How she'd really be able to favorably interact with the rest of
the people. Well, that's actually what I look forward to most, is seeing that descent. Like, Raven as a character.
I can't wait to see her descend into unhappiness and madness.
Yeah, because it's a realistic response. Like, I would have been super disappointed if she was miraculously healed, and I would be kind of upset if she the next day is like, I'm crippled, it's okay. Like, I want her to feel the repercussions
yeah.
of this. I mean, her character as a whole, like, since she was introduced, has gone through nothing but pain.
Yeah.
And I want her to address that in some way, shape, or form.
This is true. This is definitely true. This is definitely true. I think it will be interesting to see what happens with her. I was a little... The whole sequence of her getting, like, I don't know, open back surgery with no anesthesia and, like, a scalpel.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit like, I don't care how tough you are, if somebody's putting a knife into your back and cutting away you know, soft tissue, you're going to probably move.
Right.
You're going to probably have a really, really, really difficult time staying still. And when you have a knife next to your spine, the smallest movement of that knife is going to paralyze you forever anyway.
Yeah.
So that to me was a little bit like, all right, guys.
Well, I was assuming that Finn was there mostly to kind of hold her down throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And plus, I think that they'd probably get halfway through the surgery before she passes out from shock.
This is true. She screamed a lot, though.
Yeah. And I'm glad that they kept that in there.
Yeah.
Just because you felt the impact of it without having to see it.
Yeah, instead of just, okay, this is really going to hurt. Scream once, cutscene.
Yeah.
This isn't happening anymore. Cut to Abby washing her hands, and Raven's okay now.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was some weight to it. And I don't know how much open surgery and pain I need to necessarily see. So I mean, for now.
I mean, we flinched at the arm thing. I don't think we could have handled surgery.
Yeah, wouldn't have been.
So she's at this point crippled, and she talks to Finn, and he's like, hey, you know, I'm here for you. And she goes, when I wake up, don't be here.
Yeah.
Which immediately I was like, man, so cold. But she was actually being noble in that she was trying to send him out to find their friends.
But you had that same little brief expectation for just a minute that I did.
Yeah.
Which was kind of like, I didn't go this direction, but I suspected for a second she was going to say, you know, don't be here. And he's like, why? And she's like, because I mean nothing to you now. I'm on my own now.
Yeah.
Go be a free teen. I'm a crippled teen. I'm dark. But that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, so she sends, you know, Finn off. Something that I do like, you know, because she sends him off to go get the kids is that when later in the episode, which we will touch on, but just, I wrote a note that was like, oh, Finn just, you know, gets in and just gets these guys to go on this expedition. And I was kind of like, okay, like, that's lazy writing. I guess he could just get in. I mean,
right.
There's not that many guards. Maybe it worked out. But they gave a really great explanation for it.
Yeah.
It actually, and it came full circle, and I felt, I scratched out my note.
That's awesome.
They showed me.
Yeah. I bet the writers are like, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll teach you. Yeah. Never question us again.
It's like the Billy Madison scene. It's like, you know, he's like putting the lipstick on and crossing people off the list. I just got crossed off the list.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
Well, yeah. So we'll jump into Bellamy and Murphy and all that stuff. So when we come into their characters, it's Kane talking to Bellamy, trying to figure out exactly what happened with the Grounders so he can form a strategy to defend themselves at Camp Jaha. And while this is going on, they bring in Murphy to also be a prisoner alongside Bellamy.
Right.
Which... you know, putting vinegar and oil together.
Sure. Get salad dressing.
Yeah.
What?
I guess that is how you make that. What is it? It's oil and water?
Yeah, oil
and water. I don't know anything about anything.
Salad dressing's delicious. Let's go on a tangent. No,
yes. Well, balsamic, no. But yeah. So then once that they're together and they hear Raven screaming, you get this touching moment between, I guess I wouldn't call it touching, but you get a moment of understanding between the two of them as Murphy explains that he was tortured for 3 days before giving up the information about their camp. Where, and, you know, we all know that Bellamy blames him very begrudgingly because he felt like he sold them out for his own gain.
Yes. This is more on the whole, we talked about last week with, you know, Murphy and, like, they're trying to sort of give you his softer side, I guess, or make him a little bit more... they want you to be a little more empathetic to him. He murdered a couple people in cold blood while they were sleeping, and then he tried to hang Bellamy. So the touching moment, like, was fine and all, except that I'm glad Bellamy left the cuffs on.
Because
I don't believe for a second he wants anything other than to kill Murphy.
Right.
Still. I hope that they don't just try to have us forget that because they have a successful mission together. Which, by the way, I think I called last week in the predictions.
I think you did,
I think
actually.
One of my predictions was there's going to be some sort of noble reconnaissance mission involving Murphy that will redeem him in some way. Which will ultimately be disappointing because I want Murphy to die. But
I mean, we haven't got to the point... like, your prediction is incomplete because we're just starting the thing.
Sure.
There's a chance that he could catch an arrow to the neck and... bleed out and everyone cheers.
I think they're going to give him something bigger than that.
Probably. I mean, they are trying to redeem him, but like, a sad story every episode or so isn't going to absolve him of his issues.
Maybe that'll be like on the mission, and they'll run across like a really cute puppy, and he can just kill the puppy, and they'll just keep giving us reasons to hate him, so we don't forget. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what'll happen. Like the baby. They'll find like Jaha and the baby, and the baby will have like a toy, and he'll just like take the toy and throw it. You know, I don't know.
That's like, I just imagine them sitting in the writer's room being like, all right, what else can we do? All right, we're going to have him find a bag of kittens, but he's going to be next to a river, and he's just going to drop them in.
Just drop and be like,
that's Murphy. Do, 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 do. This is a show we should write.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
It's the spinoff show. The 100 kittens that Murphy drowned.
Aww.
All right, let's get off
sad.
That.
But, okay. So they're still in this prison, and later, Finn comes in and undoes Bellamy's chain, and he's like, it's time to go. We're going to find our friends.
Yeah.
Murphy is like, hey, what about me, guys? And you assume that Bellamy's going to attack him, but he lets him go because Murphy has been inside the grounder camp, so they're going to need him to navigate.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a clever way to get Murphy back in the fold. I guess I never thought even for a second they were going to leave Murphy behind. What purpose would that serve? I mean, Murphy by himself with the adults, that doesn't really do anything for you in terms of angst and anger.
Yeah.
You kind of needed him.
I mean, yeah, he's the main source of drama in this expedition.
Yes. So,
They all go out and meet up with Abby, who is essentially helping them lead the charge to find the friends, because she had had issues with Kane, because Kane wants to fortify the camp Jaha.
Yeah.
Whereas Abby really wants to find the kids, because that's her main priority. But Kane really wants to take charge, and he wants to make sure that everyone there is taken care of.
So one thing along those lines that I think is interesting is you see Abby do this a handful of times. It's nice to see her act out of passion in regards to her daughter. She makes poor decisions frequently that puts other people in danger.
Yeah.
Her decisions put other people in danger.
Yeah.
And she does that because she wants to see her daughter again. I like that she's sending 4 or 5 teenagers into the woods with guns by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Totally dangerous, considering they just ran across 3 of their officers crucified on a tree.
Yeah.
She's just like, doesn't matter. Kane's dumb. Kids, go find your friends. Here's guns. Here's guns. Here's some beef jerky. You're good. Go ahead. Find my daughter. Like, it's, you know, foolish and irresponsible on her part to put them at risk, but I like that she's doing it because it really shows that she cares. Just like in the first season, there's a lot of moments where it's, we have to see who's down, that we have to send the ship, all these things, right? Yeah. I'm gonna get myself floated for defying the order and all these things. Right? She constantly seems to be mixing things up.
I mean, yeah, and that's like the basic core of her character. Like last season, we had a thing that she was only alive because she was useful. Because everything that she did served to undermine any kind of authority.
Right.
Not to get into predictions, but I think that she's going to, you know, she's going to face the consequences of her actions finally.
Eventually.
Yeah. Which will be really interesting to see. My initial thought was like, she's not wrong, but at the same time, like, I definitely understand, like, the arc is, as far as they know, the last group of humans, alive, with the exception of the grounders. And they are barely getting on their feet. As you said, like, Kane is, Kane's men have been crucified by the grounders. And so, like, everyone is on alert at this point. And here she is sending out these kids to...
with guns.
Yeah.
Putting guns in hands of children that if they're dead, the grounders then have those guns.
Yeah. Which, can I say that I thought that the fact that Kane and them finding extra barrels of guns and bullets completely undermined the season finale?
From last season?
Yes.
Well, it did, but you understand why?
Because they need them. I mean...
I thought it was I mean, yeah, I guess they need them. But my thing was that he was saying to Bellamy, you kids think you did there was extra guns in there. You missed them. You think you're so pro. You think you did such a great job. You would have been fine if you had looked a little harder. Instead of tripping on mushrooms that you found or whatever. Isn't that what they were doing when they found the guns? They were on, like, berries? Yeah, they were.
Well, the berry thing was an accident. They didn't know that they were...
Yeah, it's true. It wasn't,
I mean, yeah, they were making hooch and drinking all the time.
I think that the point of that was to say, you guys kind of blew it, you know, you think you did great, but there was more guns, they were there, you just missed them.
Okay, well, I interpreted it as like, oh man, there were extra bullets, and then to me that said, all their struggles were in vain.
Yeah.
Though, who's to say that they wouldn't have gone through that other set of bullets as well? So, I mean, I can't really judge a thing that wasn't a thing.
It was, yeah, it was definitely writing in the sense that it was through a statement, through an unnecessary statement, or I guess in this case, a necessary statement, just trying to basically further the plot without you noticing it. It's the same statement that later, when we get to Jaha,
yeah,
he makes the baby about, oh, don't worry, there's O2 in the whole suit. It's like, you're talking to a baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're trying to explain to us that?
Right.
Seeming like you're talking to the baby? Fine.
Yeah.
Anyway. But well, it's no. That same sort of thing.
Okay, yeah. I like your interpretation of it better than my own. Because, yeah. Yes. That is acceptable.
I think that's what he meant. Kane's kind of a jerk like that. I do, before we move on from that, I wanted to say, I'm really starting to kind of enjoy the development of his character. I saw it through season one a little bit where, you know, obviously when the 300 die,
mm-hmm.
that was a great moment because you saw how much grief he had over it.
Yeah.
And his thing with his mom, and then his mom dies, right?
Yes.
And it was nice to see as his character started out as like this sort of power-hungry maniac jerk, and then the 300 die, and they have to get off the ship, and he's trying to sacrifice himself. He did some noble stuff. I liked the way his character was going, and then in the second last episode,
mm-hmm.
where he sort of asserted himself, and you were like, oh, he's kind of a jerk. But then this episode, like, I'm just starting to sort of, in the way that you, I'm trying to think how to put it, TV characters frequently just play themselves forever. They mm-hmm. never really have a whole lot of, like, range or depth. You get the sense of their character very quickly. Yeah. The way they're going to sound, the way they're going to carry themselves, the way they're going to act. They're not going to have these intense movie moments. Most of the time, it's just the same thing over and over again.
Right.
You decide very quickly if you like or you dislike characters in TV shows, and it almost never changes. You get it from pretty much the beginning.
Yeah.
If you like watching them and the way they sound and they hold themselves, or if you don't. With Kane, I was a little undecided at first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beginning to enjoy when he's on camera now. I think that he's doing a good job with that character.
Well, yeah. His character is one of the most layered of all the characters, second to maybe Clark. Because I feel like he has had to deal with the most issues in terms of, like, he has always been the one trying to herd all the cats. And every time that he tries to further his will, there's always someone standing in front of him, whether it be Jaha or Abby or someone else. He's always the lawful good. Actually, he's more lawful neutral. Anyways.
He still has to have those elements, the power hungry elements. And you can see him, they're there when he tries to assert himself. But I just think that he's a little more balanced than he was at the beginning, and he's a little more watchable now than he used to be. There was a good moment when he walked past the crucified hand.
Yeah.
And he saw the dead soldier.
Mm-hmm.
You just saw it. I liked his reaction. It was very subtle, but I just liked that choice by the writers to say, we need to show that not that he's just scared or that he understands the collateral damage of what's just happened, but he just saw like a man's hand with a stake taken out of it, and he's feeling something, and it matters to his character.
Yeah,
I think that was good.
Yeah,
I like that. That was when I made my note.
Awesome.
So
anyway. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Also, since you mentioned Jaha, let's talk about him, and then we'll do a little copy or something.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
I'll let you go first on this one. Please.
Okay.
Please, sir.
So. We come in on Jaha, kind of where we left off on the last episode, where he hears the baby crying, he's running around searching for it, and he finds this baby in a drawer.
Yep.
And so this inspires him to try to find a way off of the Ark.
Yeah.
He runs through the schematics, finds a missile, and realizes that all he needs to do is jump to the other side of the Ark's ring.
Right.
And hop in the missile with this baby and shoot himself to Earth. Easy peasy.
Easy.
Lemon squeezy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
He needed to see the baby to think about all that, though. That he could have maybe gotten off the Ark in a missile by just simply vaulting across space and disarming the missile.
Totally.
Totally doable.
Yeah.
I want to know something. What did you think about his acting in this episode? How did you like it?
I thought it was like standard Jaha. Cause that was like Jaha's, his character is super like self-sacrificing.
Right.
He often sometimes gives up. And then like he pulls himself up by his bootstraps. That's like his general arc.
Right.
Every time
over
he's
and
on
over
screen.
Again.
Yeah. And so I felt like it was that type of thing. I think he did a really good job of, because for me, when he was, just to jump forward, the baby's not real. And I felt like he did a good job of kind of conveying that this baby represents his delusions of his son.
Yeah.
And then, like, especially when he finds the chess piece in the baby's hands, like, where did that come from? You're like, oh, okay, this is a thing. This is him.
Right.
Imagining his son as like a child and trying to forward that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I loved his performance in this episode.
Yeah.
I thought it was really strong.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about the fact that the majority of his performance in the episode is one man acting.
Yeah.
You're talking to somebody who isn't there. Mm-hmm. And even if you're talking to a baby, you're still talking to something that's not going to be able to respond to you.
Yeah.
Which is, it's difficult to do. And I think he did a great job with it. Mm-hmm. I thought a lot of the moments were really nice, and especially when Wells shows up in his hallucination.
Yes,
he was great. It was very real acting. You can see the level. You can see that guy's a good actor.
Yeah,
the guy knows what he's doing, and I enjoyed that a little.
What?
They took the gravity concept, first of all. It's just gravity, except it's gravity on TV. It's the same exact thing, right?
Right.
I mean, it's exactly what happens. And
but no George Clooney.
Yeah, it's, I mean, true. It's just a baby and Wells instead. We couldn't get George Clooney. We got a baby and this other guy that we killed in the first season. Yeah. He said he'd come back.
I was glad to see him. I miss Wells every day.
Do you?
I do. He was my favorite character until they killed him.
Yeah.
But still. Yeah. I mean, there was very much like a gravity inspired deal.
Yeah.
But even so. Like, I agree. Like, the acting was really good. Like, you believe that he was, like, in this desperate situation. You believed that, like, when he was going mad and he realized that the baby wasn't real.
Yeah.
Like, that was a very, like, deep, kind of heart-wrenching moment.
Strong TV moment.
Yeah.
You don't get moments that are done quite that well. Mm-hmm. On, especially, like I said, a Showtime and HBO and AMC, that's one thing.
Yeah.
CW show... Moments like that are few and far between. They really, and they let it breathe too, which is nice. It's just mm-hmm. a one man scene. As far as the plausibility of the rocket and getting to Earth, and now that he's on Earth, I don't know what to say about it. I can't really decide if I think it's a good idea to have him in the show separated from everybody and having to like try to find them. It's just going to split focus throughout the season.
Right.
I kind of think he should have just died, and there was a part of me that just wanted him to just realize the baby wasn't there, have gone crazy, clearly strap into the rocket and just explode when he hit the ground.
That would have been great.
Just to say, like, this is how we're going to end his character arc. And
yeah.
We just needed to show you that he wasn't just going to die quietly, that he was going to nobly try to get off, but it didn't work because he strapped himself to a rocket.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would have been, it would have been very much in the vein of season one when they killed all those 300 people. It would have been like, yeah, this is a very nice sense of dramatic irony.
Yeah.
But now we get him, and I'm going to assume it's New York because that's closer to where everyone else is.
Right.
And
the Brooklyn Bridge is what you see behind you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's, it'll be an interesting journey, him
we'll
getting
see.
Near everybody. And yes, I do find it hard to believe that that missile safely crashed into Earth without any harm and in a place that isn't ocean, in a world that isn't, you know, that, what is it, 70% ocean this world is?
Yeah, one had you saw the parachute. It was, you know, parachuted down. I mean, you had that. And then the other part of it was just like, how many sci-fi movies have you seen where the first of all, the cracked helmet is going to crack and break immediately. It's not going to be a slow crack. It's going to shatter immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, as soon as you're exposed to the outside, you're pretty much going to freeze to death in about a second.
Well, actually, I've read articles about this mostly because of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
But like, you have a certain amount of time. Like, it's within, like, you could survive within maybe for about like 30 seconds to a minute.
Oh.
But after that, you're pretty much screwed.
So then I'm definitely wrong about that.
I mean, it wasn't something that was very heavily explored until everyone started making a tizzy about it because of Guardians.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, it's not a big deal.
Okay, we can move on.
Yeah, no.
You don't have to keep
throwing. Ben, you're the worst. Everyone hates everything that you say. You know nothing of science. Just kidding. We all love Ben. He's amazing.
And speaking of science and amazing, let's talk about iTunes.
Why don't we?
I'm going to leave this one to you, buddy.
Cool. Hey, guys. Yes, we're going to talk about iTunes and YouTube. We love hearing from you. And if you love what we're doing here, let us know. Go to iTunes. Go to YouTube. Leave us comments. Rate us 5 stars. If you don't like what we're doing, let us know. We're here to best serve you and give you the show that you would love to watch. So just go and tell us what we can improve on. Tell us what you love. And we will follow suit. Because we're here for you. And anything that can make this show better, we would love to hear. Ben, anything?
Yes. Everything he said and more.
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome. So now we're going to jump into a little talk about Lincoln and Octavia.
So, same interview with Jason Rothenberg. He makes reference when asked, you know that all the fans want to just keep seeing Linktavia, is what they're being called. I hate Octavia. I hate their story. I hate everything about it. I don't know why they're still in the show. You could literally not show me them as characters anymore in the show, and it wouldn't matter. It really wouldn't matter. Octavia could have died in the explosion. Lincoln could be dead by now. The Grounders as a tribe would still exist, and everybody, the kids and Mount Weather, it would all still be happening.
Right.
They have nothing to do with the plot anymore. They're just their own side thing. However, there were a couple moments that I liked.
Okay.
Octavia, I liked how, like, foolishly passionate she was to try to save Lincoln. It was, like, a bad plan. Like, she for all intents and purposes, would have been dead. There was, like, 9 guys with bows and arrows. They would have killed her.
Mm-hmm.
And walking away, like, there's just no way. There's absolutely no way.
Right.
They're savages. They're not nice people. They're not going to just keep her alive when she's threatening to kill their healer.
Well, I would disagree. I think we've come to at least establish that they're not savages. They are people who are living a more rough and tumble life, but they're not, like, I would call the Reapers savages.
Okay.
They, I would qualify as just, they're guerrilla soldiers. Or, like, old-style village livers.
I'm going to step back my criticism just a little bit, because I think I just went a little nuts. I don't hate Octavia, and I don't hate Lincoln. I mean, their stories may end up turning out to be relevant.
Right.
I just, in the sense of you think about what they're adding right now,
yeah,
it feels totally unnecessary. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, yes, it's very much kind of a side story, which I'm assuming, and not to like jump into predictions, but I'm assuming that it'll have a bigger part in the overall storyline, especially with what we find out at the end. Because she is essentially developing into someone who can live amongst the Grounders.
Right.
And so they're going to need something like that as time goes on. And so that is, I mean, though we don't really enjoy the, like, romantic aspect of her storyline, we can see that she might be a linchpin at some point.
Yeah. Everybody loves them, apparently. I think they're, like, the most popular characters
in
the show.
They're shipped so hard, and everyone is raving about them.
Yes.
I think that if they were to die, either one of them, there would be a riot, and no one could leave their homes because the streets would be flooded.
And people would stop watching the 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe they'll get the spinoff show.
I mean, they could at this point. It could just be the two of them living amongst the Grounders, having, like, I don't know, Flintstone-type sitcom-y scenarios. Like, honey, did you get the poisonous mushrooms? I didn't. You're going to need an antidote. Ha, ha, ha.
I liked how Octavia, she seemed like kind of a badass, which was cool.
Yeah.
It was nice to see her just, she gets woken up. She's saved from the poison. Where's mm-hmm. Lincoln? You're not going to tell me. I'm going to hit you with a rock. And I'm going to just, you're bigger than me. I don't care. I'm going to just, I know what I want. If I die trying, so be it.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's a good, solid choice.
Yeah. I mean, her character is definitely growing and developing. Like, she started out as a really whiny brat, and now she's kind of earning her stripes, which is good. I felt bad for, what is his name? Nyko, Lincoln's friend.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was just trying to help.
Seriously.
And he got taken prisoner. Now everyone has been stolen by the Reapers. It's a bad day for all.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Something I forgot to mention, I just saw my note here, I just wanted to point out, was along with the intro music, or the intro credits,
mm-hmm.
I liked the... I just generally like how much time and money they're putting into designing the world. Because I thought that when Jaha was flying between the spaceships, mm-hmm. it was a really pretty shot. It looked really nice. I mean, the design of the spaceship, the CGI behind it, the lighting and everything, it looked like a movie. It was pretty solid. It didn't feel like a TV show I was watching. So.
Yeah.
It's worth noting.
It was really well done.
Yeah.
I'd like to imagine that they were that their thought was, well, this is the last time you're going to see the Ark. Enjoy it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree. It was super well done. And so that's where we left off with Lincoln and Octavia, is the Reaper swooping in and taking them during the hostage swap.
Yeah.
I think Octavia is just knocked out. She hasn't been taken away.
Yeah, so you wonder, like... trying to figure that whole thing confused me a little bit, just because I felt like the savages have had opportunity to kidnap these. I guess they're kidnapping them to eat them. Was what we're supposed to expect?
Yeah,
the Reapers. But then why wouldn't they take Octavia? She's just more meat.
But she's like a lanky little 90 guy.
Pounds. She has no meat on her at all.
Yeah,
as we talked about last week.
Yeah,
now it would have been Clark. No, I'm just kidding.
No. No. And they had mentioned that now, at this point, their defenses are so low that they can't defend against the Reapers. So I guess before, they had different traps and different guards to kind of fend them off. But now the Reapers are just having their way with them.
Makes sense. Let's see.
But yeah.
So the last thing we're moving on to.
The last big meat of the story.
I'm sorry. Did you have any more thoughts on
no.
that?
Okay.
Okay.
Man, this is a give and take. you keep me honest. I make fun of you the whole time. That's how this works. Yes, we got to get to Clark and Mount Weather, because that's a big, big part of this whole story.
Huge. The best reveal. Would you argue the last bit, best reveal the show's given us so far?
Yes. That was everything I could have wanted and more. Like, before it happened, I was like, because we were discussing it, just to go into it. We had...
That and Wells dying. Wells dying is probably the other one.
Oh, Wells dying. Oh, wait, what? Oh, yes.
In terms of shocks
and stuff.
Yeah, like an ending. I think that was a pretty big one.
Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Wells. sorry, I was mourning for a second. So we get Clark in Mount Weather, and everyone's having a good time. Jasper's hitting on Maya.
Oh, Maya.
Weird. Basically, Clark is still trying to figure out a way out. And an alarm goes off, and you find out that two of the scouts from Mount Weather have been they've been injured. That's all the information that they really give, is that they've been injured. One took off his protective gear to try to help the other.
Yeah.
And he ends up getting radiation burns from the environment outside of Mount Weather.
It looked very similar to the acid rain burns that the characters got.
Yes.
In the first season.
Yeah.
Right?
I didn't even think about that, but yeah, you're right. Yeah,
looked the same.
And so we are to assume that these men were injured when the Camp Jaha people shot because they saw something moving in the woods.
Okay, yes.
And so
I hadn't thought about that, yeah. Yeah, two and two together. All right.
That's what I'm here for. No. So basically, these two men are brought in. Clark makes her way into the med area to find out what happened. And she's like, those are bullet wounds. And everyone's trying to convince her that they're arrow wounds because they don't want her to know that people are still out there. And she knows that the grounders don't use guns. But they're trying everything that they can to convince her otherwise.
Yeah, so a note that I made about this when I first just I thought about it at the end of last week's episode and even more during this. So his name is Dante Wallace, the president.
Yes.
Why is Dante, I mean, unless they're expecting to get something from Clark, it's like, why is he putting up with it? Nobody else is why is she important to him? Do you know what I mean? He's giving her so much rope. Oh, you can go see patients. You can go see this guy's bullet wound. Sure, you can meet me in my office. You can talk, you know, disrespectfully to me in front of all the people who live here.
Yeah.
I'll just keep letting you get away with it because I like you, Clark. It's like, no. Unless he's using her for something and she serves a very important purpose, which maybe she does, I don't think that he would be as sympathetic over and over and over again to her running around and knocking down doors and forcing her way into med wards.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, my belief in that regard is that I think that if he were to make moves against her, then the other 48 would take issue with it.
But that's what Jasper said, right? I mean, Jasper actually brought it up, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
Again, it's the writers tipping their hat to my, you know, criticizing them.
They're like, Ben wants this, so we're going to make it happen, guys. but no, and you're right. Like, there is no, I personally find that, there's no reason that he should tolerate it. But I think that he views her as just a means of keeping them under control.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think he wants to keep the peace as much as possible. I mean, unless he plans to use Clark and the other 48 in the same way that we find that they are using the grounders.
Do we think that they're in those cages? Spoiler alert. I mean, spoiler alert, guys.
You've seen it.
If you've watched 42 minutes of this after show, then you know that they're caged grounders at the end that are being blood drained.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. But do we think that's just grounders, or did we think that there were some kids in there? I think they tried to make it look like it was just grounders, right?
I believe so.
But where are all the kids? You see like four kids.
I mean,
in that weather. They're supposed to be like 40 plus.
They're all hanging out. Like, most of them don't even have faces.
Most of them are just like partying, and it's like 90210. Yeah. That was a dumb joke.
we allow dumb jokes here.
Yes. There was definitely that moment, though, where they were all hanging, and Clark's like looking at her thing, and she's like, she's about to let it go, and then you know she's not going to.
Yeah.
Fun music's playing. You're eating cake. There's probably underage drinking off screen that we're not seeing.
Right.
Who cares? It's the new world and they're all partying. It's like, there's probably like some like hotshot who's taking his shirt off. It's off screen, of course.
Yes, of course.
And then you're just like, this is 90210. Wait. Nope.
Oh yeah.
Clark needs to go find this blood farm in the ceiling.
Yeah. And I love that, like, that she manages to put the two and two together. Cause you see, I wrote down his name because I don't remember names. Langston. You see, he was the one who was radiation burned.
Yeah.
And he is almost completely healed the next time she sees him.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that sets up a bunch of red flags.
And then Clark does that thing to her arm, which made my stomach turn.
It was just I didn't know if they were actually going to show it. So, she takes the wound in her arm that's all stitched up, and she runs it against the corner of a bed frame to open it up so she gets access to the med ward.
Stitches off. I mean, it was just like, God.
And they just show the blood pooling, and it was gross.
Yeah, it was an effective move on CW's part to show us that one.
Clark uses self-destruct. It's super effective. Nerd stuff.
But so then she climbs in the ceiling and she finds a bunch of sad looking grounders that are all caged and having their blood drained. I had this theory that I was sort of imagining for a brief moment just before they revealed that to us.
Yeah.
Because I was noticing like how Dante Wallace's skin looks so sort of papery and thin, and he's an old guy, so I mean, it could just be the actor's skin actually just looks like that. But
right.
I was just sort of like, they all are so pale inside Mount Weather, and I know they don't go outside, so that's why. But I sort of had this moment of like, are they, do they have some sort of clever or like amazing formula to stop aging? Is that why they all, is that why they all have these old school devices and everything? And it seems like they're living 50 years prior.
Right.
Were they all that age 50 years ago and they've stayed the exact same age and stopped aging somehow? I don't know. This was just an idea. And then we got the blood farm and it was like, ah, something else crazy's happening.
That would be interesting. I mean, one of our YouTube commenters kind of gave a little background as to why a bunch of stuff was there. So essentially, I guess it was back in the 50s, it was packed full of different wares and artifacts and clothes and things like that. It became a museum at some point, and then we assume that from that point on, then they started bringing in their own stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, by the way, YouTube user whose name I wish I had written as a note so I could thank you by name. But you were wonderful. That was very sweet of you.
It was. It was amazing. We'll give you a shout out on the next episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you guys are amazing, keeping us honest. You're telling us all the information that we need to know. Every time I make fun of the name Melvin, an angel loses its wings. And I know that his name is Tristan, and I meant no offense to any Melvins. But thank you for commenting. We really appreciate it, and we read all of them.
I thought it was funny that you called him Melvin like 4 times, and I called him Chuck like 3 times, but you got jumped on.
Well, I mean, it was probably my tone. Melvin is how I talk, because I have a terrible, terrible tone.
If you had just gone with Chuck, you could have avoided all of this.
Totally. But anyways.
Yes.
So yeah, we get the big reveal that there's grounders all over the... in cages in Mount Weather.
Yep.
And Clark happens to stumble across Anya, the leader of the faction of the grounders that was trying to take them down when they were in the dropship.
Yeah, so let me think if there's anything else we should reference for a minute before we get to predictions, mm-hmm. because they seem poignant now.
Yes.
I don't think so, right? She finds them, and that's pretty much the final moment. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? What do you think is going to happen with that? I mean, they showed a clip or two from the next episode.
Yeah.
But we won't reference that.
Yeah. So let's jump into predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
The predictor music feels like it was built for Halloween.
It was. It's super, like, spacey sci-fi.
Yeah.
I forget what that... what that instrument is, doesn't matter.
No.
But so now that we're in predictions, I would say that I think that one, the main two issues that I see coming in the next couple episodes, or at least in the next episode, is Abby dealing with the fact that she let the kids go and Kane trying to keep his rule over Camp Jaha.
Hmm.
So that's going to cause a lot of tensions, which will be good to see. Not that I have anything against Abby. I just think that she's been getting away with things for way too long.
Crimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that, like, Clark isn't going to stand for having all these people in cages, and so she's definitely going to try to break them out. I'm hoping that, essentially, once she gets out, and I kind of, like, touched on this earlier, in that, like, now we'll have Octavia as a kind of liaison between the grounders and her. So I'm hoping they converge and stage a kind of a revolt on Mount Weather.
Yeah. I think a lot of what I was thinking, you kind of touched on it there. I do think, now that I think about it, maybe the reason the kids are being treated so well is because there's a limited number of grounders in those cages, and possibly eventually... it will be necessary to drain their blood to keep the Mount Weather people alive. So there will definitely, almost undoubtedly, be a confrontation in the next episode. And maybe a revolt. Maybe the kids from the inside will try to overthrow Mount Weather.
Mm-hmm.
Or just escape. Just run out. I could definitely see that happening. As far as... something could happen with Murphy, would be the other thing. On that, like, reconnaissance redemptive mission that they're on together, the kids... I would guess, excuse me, I would guess there's a decent chance Murphy has to do something, kind of step up, or do something to like save Bellamy's life.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to fix his character, but I think that's something we're going to need to see in the next episode to justify him being around.
Right.
That would be my other prediction.
Self-sacrifice.
Something. Maybe. He's not that noble.
Cool. Any final thoughts on the episode?
Just that it's awesome, and we're counting down because this season is in the fall, so there will be two natural breaks, Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yeah.
Episode 5 is the first big, huge twist. Mm. This is what somebody tweeted it, I think.
Okay.
Maybe Rothenberg tweeted it, that episode 5 is the first huge plot point we're going to see. Something Great. Giant's going to happen, and then later in the season, there's another thing that turns everything on its head completely.
That's exciting.
So, yeah, I think it's 16 episodes this time instead of 13.
Okay.
And, yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, that wraps us up. Thank you for joining us. Make sure to follow us on the social medias. Ben, where can they find you?
You can find me at Ben_Bateman on Twitter and Ben Bateman Media on Instagram. I'm terrible at both, but I'd prefer my Instagram.
Follow him on both. And you can find me, Tari J. Miller, on Twitter at Tari J. That's TauriJay. And you can find me on other assorted panels here on AfterBuzz TV. Thank you for joining us, and have a wonderful day, night, or evening.
Take care, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.